Yo, what's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 3 of Street Level Floppies, a show where we highlight creator-owned books, the smaller publishers, and the imprint titles. My name is Andrew. I go by the name Real Comics on Twitter, and I'm here with my co-hosts to talk about some comics tonight. On my right, I have Fred.
What up?
And on my left, I have Chris.
Yo, what's up?
Excellent. And we're here to talk some comics. We also want to let you know we are proud members of the Nation of Nerds. Our goal is to entertain, educate, and introduce you to some new books that you might want to give a try. With that said, let's get into some comics and some news. It's the dreaded fifth Wednesday of the month. Yes, you know the one where we don't get a lot of comics, but we still found some hidden gems this week. We dug around. We went really deep, really, really deep. And we found a few comics to talk about today. But first, let's go over a little bit of news that's happened this week. First of all, it looks like we are going to be getting the DC streaming service sooner than we thought. Fred, what was the date that you had on that?
Ooh, put me on the spot. I think September 15th was actually the day that it's released, because isn't that something to do with Batman, like Batman Day?
Oh, Batman Day. Is that the day they're giving us a comic with nothing in it and we're all going to pay for a comic that's blank that just says Batman on top of it?
Yeah, it's probably something Brian Michael Bendis drew or something. Yeah. We'll probably get something there.
Brian Bendis drew 5 years ago and we'll come out of one of his indie books. Yeah, so, it looks good. I'm still waiting to see what comics are in the service. For me, that's the big selling point, personally. The shows, I am going to wait. If I were to order the service, I'm going to wait and see if Titans is any good. Let's see what the reviews are. And as for the other shows, they're old shows. So, yeah, that's where I fall. What do you think, Chris? You ordering the DC streaming service?
What? I know it's coming, like you said, the books. But it doesn't seem like it's going to be like a Marvel Unlimited thing that's just going to have everything. It's going to be like a rotating, curated select series. So, I don't know what that's about. Also, I don't know what shows it's coming with to start. Like, what's the content? I know, is the Titans going to be like the first show on there, or?
Titans is going to be the first new show. There's going to be old stuff like Lois and Clark. I think Smallville might be on there. Those original black and white Superman. Just old DC related shows. Wonder Woman with Linda Carter, I believe, is on there.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of cartoons will be on there. A lot of the animated stuff. But yeah, nothing new right away. I mean, there's stuff in development, but it's not ready. So Titans will be the first. So part of me is like, well, okay, I'll wait till after five episodes of Titans before I actually buy it, 5 weeks. Yeah. And if Titans is any good, then I'll just binge those five.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking. I don't know. I've already got two streaming services and, you know, a third one. It really have to offer something. I mean, the animated shows sound good. I'd love to watch like Static Shock and Justice League and Superman and Batman, Young Justice. You know, that sounds cool. But this is a tough sell. You know, just all DC stuff. It doesn't seem like enough content, and I don't know.
Yeah, I'm with you. It needs a Young Justice. Fred, what do you think?
I keep receiving the emails. In fact, I think I got one today to warn me that this is like the last chance offer I can get for like a discounted price. But I'm still holding off too, because I don't know what to expect. I mean, what kind of books are going to be covered? That's a definite selling point. Like, are they like good story arcs, or are they just New 52? I don't know. Also, like, the old shows, like, I'd definitely be into, like, something like Wonder Woman, like the Linda Carter stuff. That's kind of sweet. But I can get that on MeTV, you know, here locally. And I don't have to pay $7.99 because that's on regular TV. But, like, the Young Justice Outsiders, once that comes out, and Titans, I think Titans starts, like, a month after it's released, I might jump on then. Might have to get rid of Netflix for a minute. We'll have to see. I have to see what the buzz is first. I'm not just going to jump in and just throw away $7.
And then Yeah, and then is it gonna have? It's not gonna have any of the CW shows, right? Which is kind of
doesn't look like it yet. No,
their most popular shows. Yeah, you could just watch those on Netflix.
Now, I could see them moving eventually. It might just be that there's a contract with Hulu and Netflix. But definitely they're going to want to move off Hulu because Disney's going to be owning Hulu. So they might not want to be on there anymore. But yeah, I don't know. It's a nice kick. And I'm concerned with the comics that it's just going to be all the ones I know already. Like they're going to give me the greatest hits. Like it's going to be Hush and it's going to be, you know, Flashpoint. And it's going to be, you know, all the greatest hits that I already have. I don't, like you said, I have unlimited so I can read the obscure stuff.
Right. And with like those books that you speak of right there, you can get for free, like with your library card using Hoopla app. Which you can get all that stuff for free. I mean, there's tons of graphic novels that you can get on there. And I don't see if it's available for free, why are you going to pay $7.99? I mean, I'm definitely a DC fanboy, but give me some content. Tell me what we're getting.
And then it seems like it's going to be switching over time. So for 1 month, they'll have a certain select amount of books. And then the next month, those books will leave and they'll have another. At least I think that's how I read that right. And that's how it's going to go. It's going to be like a rotating list of books.
And see, that's annoying. What if I'm in the middle of reading something? Yeah. And I don't know when the switch date is, and it switches me.
I think a better strategy would have been for, and I don't know if this is too big of a thing, but what if Warner Brothers just kind of made a streaming service? I heard Disney is doing that, that they're soon to be making their own streaming service for all of their properties. You know, DC is such a small part of Warner Brothers' property that I don't think this is going to be like a hit.
Yeah, it doesn't have enough. Well, you know what the big seller is too? Now, this you have to really be a DC head is they're going to have a live daily show that gives you updates and they're going to interview creators and different things like that. So I've seen some of the hosts. Some I like, some I don't. Not going to name the ones I don't, but you know, people from all the major, like there's some people from Collider, there's some people from Nerdist, there's some people, you know, that are going to be hosts on the show. And so that's another selling point. It's where you get now, your DC news. Yeah. But
that sounds like it could be fun, right? Like different shows and podcasts and stuff with the streaming service. That'd be cool, man. I could think of a few creative ways in which they could kind of spin that. Like they could get together like classic creative teams from like old books and talk about how that got put together. You know, I could see something like that or something. Yeah, that would be fun.
Yeah. They've got to survive until they get enough content to get us to care. That's I think that's the problem. Because once they have the content, I remember when the WWE Network debuted, and I kind of see it as the same similar thing, because all it was WWE, right? And like, how are you going to get people to subscribe to just watch WWE old shows? But slowly they started building with their little reality shows, with you know, the little interviews and the vignettes and different things they were doing on the show, so it wasn't just a pay-per-view. And now, you know, it's a successful little network, so that's the route they need to go. But it takes a while to build all that content.
So, yeah, so like the CBS app, they have a streaming service, and I wasn't going to get it. And then they put out a Star Trek show saying, we're only going to put this Star Trek show on the streaming service. And it's like, okay, you got to watch Star Trek. So I got it, you know, just for the season. And when the season was over, I took it out. But, you know, it was good to have that content. You need content people want. And I don't know if, you know, Titans didn't get off to a good showing. So I don't know if people are going to join in for that. But they've announced some good things so far. So I'm hoping, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, makes sense. Fred made a good point. I did not watch the first episode. Maybe they addressed some of these things. And we're guilty of complaining about something that they've already talked about. Just throw that out there as a caveat. Did anyone else watch the debut show with Kevin Smith?
Right. I didn't watch the show with Kevin Smith. It's still saved on like my YouTube list. I kind of bookmarked it on my phone. But I think it was late that night. I was texting you, and I was like, "Oh, I'm gonna watch it," and then I ended up falling asleep. So I'm definitely gonna have to watch it. Definitely, this, I'm sure some of this stuff's been addressed. We're just venting right now.
Yeah, we're just, you know, throwing out our opinions. I mean, it is an expensive service. I mean, not expensive, but it's another service on top of multiple services.
Listen, we're consumers, you know. The way that entertainment is rolled out to us, you know, it's streaming-based. And if we're going to put our money into something, these things accumulate over the year. We want good content. That's all it is. You know, I don't want this to fail. You know, I'd love to see they announced a Stargirl show. I want to watch that. Swamp Thing, I want to watch that. Young Justice Season 3, I want to see that. You know, all these things. Doom Patrol. I want to see these things, and I want them to be good. It's just, please have enough of it to justify that you're asking for as much money as a streaming service that has hundreds of shows and movies. That's all.
That makes sense.
You know.
All right, rant over. We'll get into our comics now. All right, let's get into this week's comics. Our six nominees, like I said, we had to dig a little harder. It was a fifth Wednesday. And sometimes it's a little harder to find a good book, but we found a few. Okay, our first book of the week is called Beyonders Number One. A young boy obsessed with crop circles and cryptography finds his boring life turned upside down when he discovers that all of his conspiracy theories are true, sending him on an ultimate treasure hunt for an ancient secret spanning thousands of years. What is the connection between a lost mountaineer, an indecipherable manuscript, and the lost library of Alexandria? How is this connected to a one-eyed, flatulent Welsh corgi and endless plates of corned beef sandwiches? This book is written by Paul Jenkins, artist Wesley St. Clair, letters by Marshall Dillon, variant cover by Andy Ewington, published by Aftershock. This is Beyonders. Fred, what'd you think of Beyonders?
Well, you kind of got me laughing with the flatulent dog part. I didn't.
That's what it said. But, I just read it.
I don't remember that part in this book, but from the beginning of this book, it kind of delves into like some history and mystery, and you can, you know, we get this history lesson from, we find out is our protagonist, that's a teenager named Jacob. And he's kind of a conspiracy theorist, a code breaker. He tries to connect all these events that he speaks about in the beginning of the book. But then once you get deeper into the book, you kind of understand the reason why he chases conspiracy theories is because his life is as boring as his uncle's corned beef sandwiches and his fish sticks.
Yeah.
you can, you know, and then... You know that the kid's definitely smart and stuff because he goes to his guidance counselor and he puts into these he tries to get accepted for MIT. Did it say like Georgia Tech and Stanford? Mm-hmm. Some couple big like IT schools. And he says like I excelled in math and physics, but his counselor, you know, kind of says something that threw me off. And he says, like, universities look at more than academic achievement. And I was like, wait, what's going on? Like, I'm starting to buy into his conspiracy theories, too, you know. But I will say this book was definitely very heavy in dialogue, especially in the beginning. And if you kind of like the... remember like the movie like Conspiracy Theory with Mel Gibson and was it Julia Roberts?
I think so.
I think if you like that, you'll definitely like this. And I'll let you guys comment on a couple more things. I have a few more points.
Well, if I already compare it to a movie, the movie I thought of was like National Treasure, like Nicolas Cage. It's like, you know, all these like symbols and history and like you said, Fred, mysteries and puzzles and stuff like that. It is I actually really like the dialogue in this book. It really showed like the character. kind of where his brain is at. So he's like this conspiracy theorist, and he's here and then he's there, and he's connecting all these dots that kind of don't seem to be connected. And it makes you think as a reader, and it makes you want to follow along. The plot for the first issue was a bit, you know, all over the place. A lot of stuff I felt happened in this first issue from the beginning to the end. But it's interesting stuff. So it's not like it was just random things. And it was interested in the book. I was interested in many of the things that happened. Something else I really liked was in each panel, there's kind of these weird, like, I don't know if you've saw it, like these weird symbols in each panel. And yes. I was like, I had noticed that like midway through, and I'm like, wait, what is that? And then at the end, they kind of explain, like, it's a little puzzle that the writers are putting together for, like, kind of the reader to figure out, which I thought was kind of dope. But overall, it was decent. It has some fun moments in it.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to go against the grain. I didn't really like this book. And it's weird because everybody loves this book. I mean, I'm seeing everyone rave about it, and it just didn't work for me. Kind of like what you said, Chris, it felt like it was all over the place. And I was like stopping every other page and going, what the hell's going on here? And it took me a long time to understand, probably not until, you know, the actual helicopters are coming down and they're breaking through glass, where I kind of understood, oh, okay, this is what's going on. The puzzle thing didn't kind of get me right away, the ciphers and stuff. But what's interesting is the end of the book and the reveal got me excited for a later issue. I think kind of like what you talked about some other books. You talked about Lost City Explorers, for example. I want the adventure, and this kind of like setup didn't really work for me. Yeah. But I'm intrigued of what the possible adventure is, especially now when you say the Nicolas Cage movie. Yeah, okay. So they're going to go off and solve puzzles and figure things out. That intrigues me. But the book itself had some problems. The lightning storm that caused the problems for him, the way it was drawn, I thought they were explosions. And I was trying to figure out, how does nobody get upset about an explosion?
Yeah.
It took me to, oh, it's lightning. Yeah. And then I'm sorry, he's a conspiracy theorist. And most teenagers already think their parents are kind of weird and something's wrong with them. How would he not guess that his aunt and uncle have some issues going on? I just think he would have caught that. Just a little nitpick there on that.
I really liked how this book played into the conspiracies. Like you mentioned the lightning storms. And when I first saw the lightning storms, I thought, like, okay, they're just lightning storms. But and then I started thinking of, like, okay, conspiracy theories, weather, and then how they have, like, that whole, like, weather-controlled, you know, lightning storms that people talk about with conspiracy theories and whatnot. And because it kind of seemed like that kind of happened on purpose to kind of like throw the whatever was going on with the parents so that he could finally, so it could be revealed or whatever. So I was like, maybe they controlled the weather. That's a big conspiracy theory, you know, that goes around a lot. So it was a lot of like tricky things going on in this book that I thought was, cool for like people to pick up on.
Gotcha. Fred?
Yeah, I mean, with this aunt and uncle and stuff, and they were just, they did a lot of times sound or come across like they were very robotic at times, especially with the corned beef and him mentioning, and it seemed like he just repeated certain things. But like the art that was shown when they were sitting on the couch and stuff, I started, like, that started making me, like, look deeper into the book because I'm like, something's going on with them. And then we turn a couple pages and we find out what happens. And that reveal was pretty sweet to me. Like, I'm like, it kind of felt like a, what's that director, like, Jerry Bruckheimer? Like, it goes from, like, 0 to, like, 100 in his movies. Like, that's the feeling I got with this book. Like, maybe it was, they hit us with too much too quick. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But I liked how like the reveals happened at the end, and I feel like it set up like issue 2 perfect by just like turning upside down what's his name? Jacob's life that quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean I agree with both of your points. Like it did seem like it was a little too much too quickly in the first issue. But it also, like you mentioned, Andrew, when we were talking about Lost City Explorers and how kind of the beginning is taking too long, maybe this mm-hmm. writer is like, all right, I'm just going to throw everything in the first issue so we could just jump straight into the adventure. You know, because like you said, it sets up the story pretty well. You know, I kind of get it. You know, I kind of get what's going on. But what would really be concerning for me is if we get into issue number 2 and 3 and it's still just kind of all over the place without tying up anything. And you know, that's what I worry about. Like if issue 2 and 3 is like this and not follow any sort of structure and it's just kind of going crazy, then I don't know if I'd stick with it. But for first issue, it's okay.
Yeah. And the puzzle idea is really interesting. It'll definitely suck in that crowd that enjoy that type of story mm-hmm. and that type of challenge, without a doubt. You do the puzzle, Fred?
No, I'm not a puzzle guy.
Well, you kind of dug deep on what was the one we did recently? In Volition.
Mm-hmm.
When you looked up the symbols. So I thought maybe you did a deep dive on these symbols too.
No, I mean, this book kind of, I got into this book just because of the dialogue. I like the dialogue. It kind of like was speaking to me a bit because, you know, I'm not like no Alex Jones follower or anything, but I do like a good conspiracy theory. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't believe in all that stuff. But, you know, this, I like my conspiracy theories in comic books. Let's set that straight. But, yeah, I dug this book a lot, and I'm definitely going to continue to read it just because I like the story. I want to see what happens. And you have a Corgi with the eye patch that starts talking to you and stuff. Then I'm definitely like, what the hell's going on? This is definitely comic book stuff.
Yeah, and he's flagellant, supposedly, too.
Yeah.
All right, so if we were going to score these things, Chris, what would you give this one?
Okay, well, I'm not going to be doing the puzzles because I'm not a puzzle person either, Fred. I'm the type, if I get a puzzle in a video game, I'm going straight to the internet to figure it out.
Amen.
this was a decent book. I'd give it a 3.
And Fred?
I'll give it a 4. I liked it quite a bit. I'm definitely going to continue. I like books that make me think and question things, so this is definitely right up my alley.
And I'm going to be the evil one that goes 2.5. It wasn't my cup of tea, and I know. At me, Real Comics, I know. I went against the grain, but it wasn't for me.
Right, exactly. Send all your hate mail to him, even that Alex Jones stuff.
Yes. Hey, I like the Corgi. All right. Book number 2, Scarlet Number 1. From the creative team that brought you Daredevil and infamous Iron Man comes the latest explosive chapter in their creator-owned epic, which IGN called one of the best comics on the stands. Scarlet tells the story of a woman whose life has been ripped apart by police corruption. When she pushes back, she starts a chain reaction of events that will bring about the next American Revolution. Written by Brian Michael Bendis. Artist Alex Maleev. Letters by Joshua Reed. Variant cover by Michael Gatos. Published by Jinx World. This is Scarlet. Okay. This is a Bendis book that is a creator-owned book, kind of, under the DC, name. I mean, it's not even Vertigo. It's, you know, something under DC. And this book was a bit of a challenge as well. Caveat, I did read some of his earlier work. Scarlet was a series he put out in 2016. I believe it's 10 issues. You can get it in trade form. And it really introduces who Scarlet is. One of the problems is this book expects you to know a little more than probably most people will know. It gets the story running, but at the same time, you feel like there's missing pieces. Maybe the idea is to show you the missing pieces at a later time. That's how he's going to build this book up. It's a lot of dialogue, a lot of inner monologue, which is very Bendis. The art is beautiful, though. I will give it that. I did get the extra copy of the book. It's a good-looking book. the premise is semi-interesting. We've seen it before, dystopian, you know, where the government is at odds with a certain group of people and they're rebelling. And they seem to be landlocked on into one part of the city. And yeah. So good but not great is where I stand kind of on Scarlet. Chris, what do you think?
Well, going into it, I really wanted to like it because Brian Michael Bendis, obviously, you know, he's been around for a long time and he appears to be one of the more socially conscious writers. So he, you know, I know when he was in Marvel, he was all about like diversity with characters. And he created Miles and Riri and stuff like that. And kind of his want to do that kind of shows with this book here. I didn't read the first 10 issues. I didn't know that this was a series. So like you said, I did kind of have a problem going into it and not knowing some things that I feel the story expected me to know, despite this being a number one issue. Like on the cover, it says number one, when it really seems like a number 11. But that aside, it was interesting. With the recap, if you read the recap, you kind of get a sense of what's going on and why Scarlet is fighting for what she's fighting for. But like, I gotta agree with you, Andrew. It feels like there are some things missing if you're picking this up as a number one. For instance, you don't quite, she kind of gets into it, but you don't quite fully grasp the reasoning why people are fighting with her. What they're fighting for. It's kind of just her, like you said, her and her inner dialogue. You don't get a sense of any of the other characters, really. There's a small tense scene with some action in it. That was kind of cool. But overall, there was a lot of stuff missing. But I really want to like this book because I really like the world that it set up. I like the situation that it set up. And maybe I go back and you said it's in a trade. So maybe I go back and read the trade before the next issue come out and I might be able to take more from it. But I just feel like if you're going to number this a number one, then you've got to put it in a way that people, you know, can kind of get it because I didn't grasp it. Or I understood it, but I didn't take from it what I feel I could have taken from it had I known what happened before.
Yeah, makes sense. Definitely. And Fred, what did you think?
Oh, well, there's a bunch of questions that weren't answered in this book. Being a number one, going into it as a first-time reader of this, Scarlet, is I didn't understand why she was considered a hero or a savior in the book, and she was referred to that. And in the whole issue, they don't really, you know, delve into why she is considered this. I mean, maybe if they answered that question, I could get past a few things and I could have enjoyed it more. And maybe I'm just being too critical because of the hype that Brian Michael Bendis has had at DC since the beginning. They built him up with tons of vignettes and whatnot to hype that he's coming. But what I've seen from his work so far, I'm not digging. The hype is bigger than the product he's been putting out. And maybe it's just not for me. I don't know.
Interesting. Yeah.
But one thing I do want to say, though, no, past the hating on the book, but a positive part is I really enjoyed the art and I enjoyed like how watercolors were used. I thought that was extremely good.
Yeah, that's definitely his style. The artist does beautiful work. Yeah, a lot of the same echoing. I mean, it had these moments. I like the use of the drones. It's very topical right now. Mm-hmm. Some of the political thought that we're and then dealing how they're cut off from being able to use their electronics. Yeah. You know, there's some interesting concepts there, but I don't know. I just don't know. And it seems like this one is going to need a little more help, and it's relying on its past accolades. Like we said, IGN says it's, you know, one of the greatest comic books on the stand, but that comic book was 2 years ago. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you go back to an old series and it doesn't capture the magic again. It was a one-time shot. So,
right. Exactly. I mean, to label this a number one and to assume that we've all heard of it or read it is, That's kind of pretty vain in my book. I mean, but I might give it another try, but I just definitely didn't like, you know, no backstory.
Yeah, like you guys said, it's, I feel like it can be good. It's very relevant, like you said, Andrew. It's got like the drones, a war at home, you know, when you talk about, you know, some of the stuff happened, you know, not to get political or anything like that, but, you know, some of the stuff that happened with the protests and Ferguson, and people are talking about, you know, military use within the United States against its own people and things like that, that are relevant, you know, that people are at least talking about. I'm not taking a side, but, you know, people are talking about these issues one way or the other. And so it's in this book. And I feel like he's dealing with it well. He's a very topical writer. He's very in the now with the, you know, political space, and he talks about these things. So I love books like that, that have something to say. It just seems like the setting, you know, is too far along for someone to just come along and pick it up. So I hope he fixes that in the second issue.
That makes sense. Yeah, I mean, it's Bendis, so I definitely am going to hold on for at least one more issue. Little thing we're going to throw out there again, this is the second one of his number one Jinx Worlds that has Batman stuff in it. So is this becoming the Batman gallery of comic books? I mean, I think I have to buy his next book just to get the next set of Batman images.
This is crazy because I told you guys earlier, I haven't seen those images on the internet at all. I haven't seen any editors or artists sharing like, hey, this is my cover for Batman. This and like, so I'm under the assumption that the only way to see this artwork is through this book. And that's wrong, man. That's very wrong. I don't know.
And it might be telling that nobody's bought this book, that it hasn't been shared yet on the internet. Because you think somebody would have posted it. People post everything. So,
and it's some good artwork. I enjoy looking at that stuff. You know, those were some cool covers, man. I just don't agree with them, you know, being exclusively in a creator-owned comic book. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I'm starting to question this. Is Jinx World creator-owned in the spirit of creator-owned? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know. Would it be a Batman Scarlet team up? You know, maybe.
Man, if what's the name of the one next week? Something versus Murder versus the United States, or Murder Inc. versus the United States, Bendis's book next week. Mm-hmm. If there's Batman in that one too, man.
Murder Inc. I think is one of his older books. Is it coming back?
I guess. I didn't know that it was an older. It's something mm-hmm. versus the United States. Yeah. Maybe.
I think it's called like the People versus, or the people of the United States versus murder.
It's like, not to get in a tangent, but I think it's like this book where the mafia takes over like 50% of the United States, something like that. I read it a long, long time ago, like 2013. I'm surprised it's coming back.
Okay. Yeah. Now that book right there, like you mentioned mafia, I'm definitely, that's something I want to, I'm going to look into that book. Maybe I'll be more interested into that one.
And when I read it back then, there was no Batman, nothing DC in it. So I don't know what's going to happen this time around.
All right. Yeah. I guess it's time to give it scores. So I'll go first since I took this book, and I am going to give it another 2.5. You know, I was criticized for giving too many 3.5s last week. Well, this will be the 2.5 week. Fred, what do you think?
Yes, and we know who that person is, Mark at Nation of Nerds, calling us out, calling us the 3.5 kings. But I also am going to echo that 2.5 because I'm at the halfway point. I don't necessarily hate it. I just want some backstory. I want to know some more stuff about it. 50%. I'm 50-50 on this book right now. Mm-hmm.
Very good. And Chris?
Yeah, I give it a 2. Not enough happened. You know, it set up some good things, but not enough happened in the book that made me say, you know, okay, this is really, really good. You know, I thought it was a little mediocre, but I have hope for the future of this series.
Yeah, what have you done for me lately, Bendis? All right, let's go on to book number three, Euthanauts number two, The Dead Speak. Grant them mercy. We learn who is alive and who is dead, for now, and who is the boy who burns things so brightly. A look at the very first Euthanaut, funeral home receptionist Talia Rosewood's life has just changed forever in this provocative new series. Retailers? Oh, never mind. That's something else. All right. Written by Tini Howard. Art and covered by Nick Robles. Colors, Eva De La Cruz. Letters by Aditya Bidikar. Variant cover, Caitlin Yarzinski. Published by Black Crown. This is the Euthanauts. Chris, Euthanauts.
Okay, so this is the second issue of Euthanauts. I did read the first one. I can't say the plot has exactly come to me. I did a little digging online, tried looking at, you know, some other people's opinions, and people seem to be really high on this book. But me personally, I just quite can't grasp what the book is trying to tell, the story it's kind of trying to tell. It has a little problem with its sequential storytelling, so it jumps around and it doesn't quite follow a structural flow to the book, you know, which comic books should have a sense of. I know some people play with it, you know, when it gets a little psychedelic and things like that, but it's really hard to follow for me. It has a lot of themes of like the afterlife. It also seems to have to do with some science themes in there, but it just kind of bounces around to the point where I personally am having a hard time, you know, figuring out what's going on. After we're done with the show, I think I'm going to go back to it and really try to pick it apart some more to see what I'm missing, because I don't want to just, you know, because it could be telling a coherent story and I'm just not getting it, and I don't want to say it's a bad book because I'm not getting it. But I don't know. How do you guys feel about it?
Well, I mean, the first issue I felt was much better. I know Andrew's on the other half. He thinks the second issue is better. For me, I felt like this book was an introduction of, is it Dr. Wolf's, her team?
Mm-hmm.
And kind of introducing us into those people. And I felt like this, you know, this issue was used to move along what happened in the first issue. Kind of, I don't know. I mean, the first issue kind of hit me because of the dialogue and stuff, and there was some edgy things that they said in the first one. This one was, you know, more so like the introduction aspect, and it seemed to be, now don't take me wrong, I love Panic at the Disco music, Fall Out Boy, but it's pretty emo. I mean, I'm not all into like the dying and speaking to the dead, so, you know, I don't know, but the art, I love the art by Robles. I thought a lot of stuff was good. Some of the colors helped things pop for him. But this, it's just not as, to me, it's not as good as the first issue.
Interesting. Yeah, there's definitely an emo aspect. Our lead character, Talia, is very emo.
She works in a morgue, man. She
doesn't believe her. Yeah, and she doesn't. My friends, I don't really like my friends. They're not really my friends. Then she has new friends all of a sudden, but she's not sure she likes the new friends. Yeah, she's a very emo character. Yeah, so this is definitely an emo book. And then the thoughts on death. She's obsessed with it, in essence.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably why she works at a morgue. She can claim it's just a job, but I think she gravitated to that type of job, is what I'm getting from both of the books. It was deep in some ways, but it was also very confusing. Like you said, it jumps. It jumps all over the place. There is no linear line to it. And I don't think it was done as well as maybe as it was done in the first book. But something about this one, maybe because it explained what I didn't get in the first one, maybe that's why I like this one more than the first one. Because you make a good point, Fred. It feels like this filled in the gaps that the first one left you guessing. So from that point of view, on its own, it's kind of a very drab book. The art is very good, yes. The drawing, the coloring is very good. It brings a lot of emotion. The characters are semi-interesting. I want a little more still. The lead, like I said, she can be a tad bit annoying, but I guess that's the whole point of this, being an emo character. anyone else have anything here?
No, I mean, this is definitely like kind of like in Beetlejuice, like the Winona Ryder character without the comedy in the book. Mm. So, I mean, it's a decent book, though.
I guess you guys liked it kind of more than me. I just, I don't know. I like I said, I'm going to go back. I looked up, you know, just to get a feel of how people are feeling about this book this week, you know, which I always do for all the books. You know, just to kind of test my opinions against others. Not that it'll necessarily change mine, but I feel like it's an important process when you're reviewing books. But like I said, I felt like it was just a little convoluted. Just a lot of dialogue. More so in the first one than the second one. I felt like they kind of fixed it in the second one, the dialogue issue. There's tons of dialogue in the first issue. I guess I'm hoping like they just start answering some questions about where does this technology come from that allows, you know, her to do this and for them to see, you know, the dead and how does that connect to the real world? I'm looking for answers here because they're just kind of introducing more topics and more things without answering other things. So that's just my opinion.
Yeah, it was difficult. I read it more than once to really kind of get my place where I felt. So I can totally get you. It's not something you read once and accept. So Fred, if you were going to give this a score?
Because of how it ended and you kind of see how it's set up for the third issue, I'll give it a 3.
And Chris, what would you give it?
I want to give it a 1, but the art is too good. The art is too good to give it a 1, so I give it a 2.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to give it another one of my 2.5s, man. I'm sorry, but that's where I'm at with a lot of these books, 50-50. I want more. I don't know if I'm just not getting them this week, you know, because like you, I did look, and it's like, wow, some people are like raving about this book. What am I missing? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm trying to figure out what I'm missing, but yeah. And please don't think we're bagging on your book if this was a book you enjoyed. It just wasn't for me. I'm just talking about me. I'm not talking about the book. Strintini is a great writer. The art is beautiful. It's an interesting concept. And I'm sure to some people it really speaks to them.
Right. Exactly. That's what I like about the platform we have is that all our tastes are different. Art's subjective. Something that Andrew might like, I might not like. And same for Chris. Yeah. So, I mean, we're just giving you our perspectives. Maybe you can, you know, connect with one of us that, you know, you might feel the same way.
Yeah, exactly. And we are buying these books and we're going to try a second issue. So, you know, we're trying to figure out what it is we're missing because a lot of people whose opinions we do value have said that they're something we should check out. So,
yeah.
Very cool. All right. Chris, yeah, you did give a score. All right. Let's move on to the next one. All right. The next one is House Amok number 1. It's a first issue. 10-year-old fraternal twin Dylan Sandifier and her family have fallen down a rabbit hole full of secret implants, conspiracy theories, Mandela effects, extra-dimensional invaders, and organ thieves. As the attacks against them intensify, the Sandifiers light out on a cross-country search for answers and salvation, blazing a bloody path of torture, arson, and murder. Can young Dylan save her family from these delusions? Or is this ornate conspiracy actually true? The Sandifiers are experiencing a mental condition known as folie de deux, a shared madness that will drive them to kidnap and torture strangers, burn down secret safe houses, and do whatever it takes to stay alive. Written by Christer Sibilla. Artist and cover, Sean McManus. Colorist, Lee Longridge. Letters by Adita Bidikar. Variant cover by Tony Sandoval. Published by Black Crown. House Amok. Fred, what'd you think of House Amok?
Whoa. 2018 has been the summer of Sabella. He's given us hits like Shanghai Red, Crowded, and in my opinion, House Amok. If you like books like Stephen King's Dark Tower, chances are you probably like this book. I consider this book a psychological thriller slash maybe supernatural horror book. There's plenty of heavy things that happen in this book. We kind of are introduced into a family that has some interesting perspectives of the world. They commit plenty of crimes, some of which can seem pretty disturbing. But I feel like the art alone tells the story perfectly. Let's get Chris. What do you think about this before I go on?
Yeah, no, I thought this book had a lot of shock value. There were some moments that I was just like, whoa, you know, I don't read that in many comics. Like you said, this dude, he can write. He's got a couple of other books. Like I love Crowded. And I raved about it, I think, in our first episode. So, and Shanghai Red too. I raved about that in our last episode. And, so, you know, I wasn't as hot on this book as the other two, but it had some interesting characters. I really like it for the characters in the family, especially the two twins. So on that aspect, I thought it was really good. Yeah.
Very good. Yeah. This book took a couple reads for me. The first time I was like a lot of like, whoa, and I wasn't sure how I felt about it. And then I went back after and thinking about some more things, and you can see a little more. I paid more attention to the Dylan character, the one character who supposedly is sane in this insane family, and seeing it a little more through her point of view. And I saw, this is wild. I kind of like this. I really saw like the wild side of like this whole family caught up in this like group psychosis where they all are believing the same thing, I guess. And I'm questioning, okay, are there really like these monster creature, whatever they are, or is it completely in their mind? And then you mix in like these crazy murders and these crazy, everything that's crazy about this whole book. And now they're on this bloody road trip. You know, even that map at the beginning of the comic makes more sense now. There's a map that has like a bloody traced line on it, and that must be their adventure of murder and mayhem that's about to take place. Yeah, Sabella is on a roll. That alone will bring me back to another book, and this book's going to get deep, and I'm kind of excited. It took me a while, but I'm kind of excited for this book. Fred?
Yeah, I mean, this book reminded me, like, as a kid growing up and seeing Natural Born Killers for the first time, like, how that movie shocked me. I mean, it makes me wonder if Sabella's on peyote when he writes. But enough about Sabella, but the art was really good too, and it kind of does have a kind of Sabella feel from Shanghai Red, because in the moments of violence, it kind of gets darker in tones and colors, and even some reds. I felt like the panels were drawn so good that you could just look at the art alone and kind of see where the story's going, like if it matched the words completely.
Without a doubt, I agree with you on the art. Like I said, Dylan's facial expressions, she has some faraway looks when they focus on her face. Like she's like not there, and she's like, what are they doing? I'm not seeing what they're seeing.
Right.
That's interesting, because you get like you said, when you start looking at it from Dylan's perspective, you start to see, like, okay, the family makes her feel like the weird one.
Yeah.
Right? The family makes her feel like the outcast, like the one who's always scared. When really, it seems like she's the normal one. She's the one having normal responses to all of these things. So that's really interesting. The older brother, he seems to have something weird with him going on that I don't quite get yet. You know, that they're showing in some of the flashbacks, and it's like, wait, what's he up to? You know, this family is nuts.
Yeah, that's why, like, two rereads. Like, at the beginning of the book, it's the brother who's in the mask. And I didn't catch that right away. I'm like, who's the dude in the mask? And then, you know, you read along, you come back, oh, it has to be the brother that's in the mask at the beginning of this thing. So, yeah, there's little things. Mm-hmm. Because it's done, like, in a flashback sense, you know. Like a Tarantino movie, showing you the end before and then going backwards. It does a lot of that. Yeah. Crazy book.
That That's a good point right there, because I didn't, in the beginning when you read the book and you see all that action and then you get into it and she's reading her report or writing her report about what happened over the summer. Like, I'm like, well, this is crazy. This is getting nuts right now. What am I getting into? What's Sabella doing to me? But at the end, like, you realize, like, what Dylan has to make an important choice at the end of the book. You know, like, either do what the family is doing, or, you know, run away.
Yeah. But when
run, go ahead, Chris. I'm telling her to run.
But you know what makes this even crazier is it's not just an attachment to your family. It's that attachment to a twin. That's a whole other level of attachment we're talking about. Twins have a very special relationship. So her twin is crazy. And to her, her twin is everything. Like, they almost can't be without each other. They complete each other. So to run away and leave the twin, that's almost unthinkable to her. So that's a whole other level of deep. It's one thing to the rest of the family, but for her twin sister, that's, wow, some craziness. So Fred, what would you score this book?
This is definitely like the book I enjoyed the most this week. I'm going to give it a 4.5.
Wow, big 4.5. The scores are getting bigger. Scores are getting bigger. Things are getting better. Okay, Chris, what do you think?
I'd give it a 4. It has very interesting themes. I really love the characterization. And I'm excited to see the fate of this little girl and what ends up happening to her family. This is going to be a really fun ride. Yeah,
agreed. I'm going to give it a 4 as well. I think there's an interesting story yet to be told, and I really am curious to see when Dylan finally has to make that break with her twin. So, yeah, very good. All right, let's move on to the next book from another one of our favorites here at the show, Bone Parish number 2. As a drug made from the ashes of the dead continues to spread across New Orleans, the Winters family is forced to defend their turf from the encroaching drug cartels. But some mysterious deaths could threaten everyone in New Orleans. Written by Cullen Bunn, artist Jonas Scarif, colorist Alex Guimaraes, letters by Ed Dukeshire, cover by Lee Garbett, variant cover by Tyler Crook, published by Boom Parish, Chris. Bone Parish, excuse me.
Yeah, I thought this book was really good. Of all the books that we reviewed this week, this was my favorite. Did we speak about issue 1 on an actual episode, or was that the
practice? That was one of our practice ones, yes.
Yeah, so you guys didn't get to hear that, but we reviewed the first Bone Parish, and I believe I gave it a 5. I really loved that one. And this continues the same thing. It's great storytelling, so it continues to answer some of the questions that we had in issue 1. Like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen because of this, and I wonder what's going to happen because of that. And it kind of continues to tell that story. And on top of that, it adds more to the character. So we start seeing flashbacks, like with the sister. And so we're starting to get into how she figured out what this drug is and how to make it. And you start to see more about the eldest son and how he became. And stuff like that. And you start to see the relationship between the family, which I thought was the strongest part. In the first issue, one thing that was interesting to me about the second issue was it seemed to omit one major character from the first issue.
Which one was that?
It seemed to, like, there was a big twist at the first mm-hmm. issue, and I didn't see anything about that in the second issue. I don't know if it escaped me.
You didn't.
I didn't see that. So maybe the mom doesn't have any more ash, or maybe something like that is going on.
You know, I don't think the issue really focused on the mom very much. So that's probably why.
Yeah. They kind of showed her a little bit with the mobster mm-hmm. from New York City. But besides that, I didn't mind, though, because I enjoy learning about the sister, especially. Mm-hmm. I really want to know why she feels the way she feels about her family. That, you know, I won't spoil you too much. But, you know, that if she gives up her secret, what's going to happen? You know, I really want to know why she feels that way. So I really enjoyed this book.
Fred?
I really like how it, you know, shows the relationship of the brother and sister, you know, characters growing up and whatnot. But the part that I really enjoy about this book is how, like, Colin Bunn hasn't really given us a guy to root for, which makes this comic even more mysterious to me. I like the art. I like how the art, the feeling, it gives you the feeling in New Orleans. But what I really like is the hallucination scenes in it. The art is, it visually stands out, especially in the coloring. You kind of get a feel that you're on Ash. What? I am messing up all over the place right now. That you are on Ash.
Yeah, I really like this book too, and it's interesting. It's two stories in one. It's a gangland story. There's the mafia angle. There's the crime family angle. We have all the, you know, the usual suspects. You have the family, which is a crime family. You have New York trying to come in and trying to take over. You have the some whatever South American, Mexican, whatever cartel, they want to come get their piece. Mm-hmm. So you have all that going on, and it's being done very well. It's showing the dynamics and the power struggle. And then you have this supernatural theme of what the Ash is. And you see it in little bits, like you see like in the sister's story, how she learned how to make the Ash in essence. The end of the story, we get a really supernatural kind of hallucination. And I really like that. And then finally, the one kicker that makes this a really good book to me is New Orleans. Something about New Orleans really works. And Bunn makes New Orleans its own character almost. Some of the things that are going on may not be as interesting if it wasn't in New Orleans. But the scenes, the area, little homages. Like when the mom is drinking, they flash down into the cup and you see the tea leaves, which is very kind of voodoo New Orleans stuff. The plantation and just different things. That brings a lot of character to this book, and it's definitely a winner. Like you said, the first one was outstanding, probably the most perfect first issue I've read in a long time, and this one kept building on what the first one did.
Listen, if you're not reading this book, please go out and buy it. this is really enjoyable. I want to go off a point that Fred made about like not knowing who to root for. It really gave me like kind of this Breaking Bad type feel, right? Where it's like, who the hell do I root for, right? Like, cause they're not doing anything good, but you like them so much that you can't help it, you know, exactly like Breaking Bad. And also there was another point that I believe you made, Andrew, about like, just the whole, you know, supernatural and the, oh, that's what it was. When you started talking about the South American, like that scene at the end was crazy, right? Where like he kind of realizes what Ash can do and the kind of experiences that it can bring him. You know, just that alone was amazing, because you kind of can, there's tons of room to write those out, because from what I understand, Ash, when you take the Ash, you experience the dead person that you took. You experience their experiences. So I feel like Cullen Bunn is going to get real creative with that. We're going to see more scenes like that of these people just having these crazy ass trips. And I'm up for that. Yeah,
definitely. The types of addiction that can be created, you know, you can get any kind of experience you're looking for. Yeah. Very cool. Fred, anything else to add?
I mean, I would just add that off of your comments about like the art in New Orleans, like it definitely gives that feel. I've visited that city at least 3 times. I loved it. There's a lot of things that you do see there. So it's definitely enjoyable. The art really hits home.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. So if we're going to give these scores, Chris, I'll let you go first.
This is a 5.
5. Big 5. Chris is big 5. His first one of the season, I believe. And Fred?
I'll give it a 4.
All right. Very cool. Well, I'm going to go 4.5 because I really like this book. It advanced the story, gave us more of the family, gave me some nice backstory on why each character might be the way they are, and then that nice little ending with the ash and that little hallucination. So, yeah, definitely high marks. Colin Bunn, once again, if you see his name, might as well at least try it because more than likely you're going to want to keep reading it. All right. Last of all, the last book of the day is Submerged Number 2. As the worst storm in New York City's history crashes over its streets, Ellie Fuentes' desperate search for her brother Angel takes her into the terrifying depths of the subway system. There she finds a lost, helpless child and is confronted with the stuff of her nightmares. Written by Vita Ayala, inker Lisa Sturley, I believe, colorist Stella Dia, letters by Rachel Deering, variant cover Jen Bartel, published by Vault. Submerged. Chris, go ahead and start us off with Submerged.
Submerged was interesting. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to read the first one, the first issue, because this is issue 2, yes. Correct? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I didn't get a chance to read the first one. And based on what I read, the first one was really integral to what happens in the second one. So I felt really bad. I just didn't have the time to go back and read the first one, unfortunately. But however, I will say, you know, the second one did have some moments in it. And it had some great art as well. So I enjoyed it on that front.
Very good. Very good. Fred, what did you think of Submerged?
In this issue, I like the focus of Elle and her mother's relationship. When they went to the flashbacks, it almost had a real feeling like this might be something personal that Vita experienced in her life. To me, mm-hmm. That's how I felt. I really enjoyed the art. I felt like the art jumped off at the pages in some parts, and the colors are just beautiful, just like the first issue. Yeah, I mean, this book is definitely good. I felt like the first one was a bit better, but I mean, I'm still invested in the story, the characters and stuff, and I'm very interested in where it's going to go next.
I would agree. The first book was a bit better. I get from this book kind of a bit of a folklore mythology. The imagery that she's talking about and seeing her mom in this fashion, it made me think of an old Mexican tale of the Llorona. Like almost like her mom is a ghost and is trying to capture her. And yeah. And the fact that the subway is supposed to be flooded. So she's down there where the water is. Also the anxiety that the fact that that thing's going to flood adds to the tale. It kind of pushes it forward, like constantly reminding you with these little announcements. It's going to flood. You need to get out of here. This is dangerous. You shouldn't be down here. And they constantly keep reminding you, despite the supernatural tale that she's going through, that this is going to flood. And I don't think the character Ellie knows that she's on this journey. Like, this is something from the first one, Chris. She runs into these three homeless like people that are down in the subway, and they each give her a coin, and they talk about, okay, this coin's for this person, this coin's for that person. And it makes me think of, you know, you have to give the money to the ferryman to get across the River Styx, and right, then you need this right. one to get back, and this one. So there's all this, and the character doesn't realize she's in this journey. She just thinks she's in the regular old subway looking for her lost brother. And so
this,
go yeah. ahead.
I was gonna say, yeah, like Fred said, those moments in the beginning that she has with her mother, you know, I hear a lot about kind of like, you know, not to spoil anything, but like homosexuality within, you know, a Latinx community and household,
mm-hmm.
and kind of how that may not be the most supportive environment for someone. And it just really, you get these like moments between her and her mom that are really tense, and it just appears to be wanting to share that experience
yeah
of, you know, a Hispanic woman growing up, or a Hispanic adolescent growing up in a relationship with family and your mom and stuff like that. And so I thought it was an important book, and I enjoyed it for where it was.
Yeah. And they elevate the son above her, even though he's younger. And he doesn't mm-hmm. seem to be very good at what he does. He gets himself beat up and different things, and she's constantly having to take the brunt of his mistakes because they're elevating, which is very common in families. They can do that. Yeah. Fred?
Yeah, I mean, the relationship that she has, like, they don't really necessarily speak a lot about the brother. This is more like, in this issue, it's more about, like, her relationship with her mom. But when they do speak about it with her brother, it almost feels like she's raising him, and it's her responsibility on and not the parents. And they kind of use, like, the fear of the father to be, like, what would your dad feel and stuff. It really felt personal. Like, it was very something that maybe she went through, or she understands totally, that she just wanted to share it. Like, you're not alone. People go through this, you know? Yeah. But I totally like this book. I could say I'm totally submerged into this book. Oh, see what man. I did there? Yeah, I did that.
Party foul.
But, are you guys ready to give scores, or?
Yeah, let's give some scores. Go ahead and go first, Fred, since you're submerged.
I'll give it a 3.5. I really enjoy this book. I can't wait to see what happens in the following issues. Yeah, 3.5.
Excellent. And Chris, what do you think?
I give it a 3. The art was beautiful. I really am looking forward to this story progressing and seeing more about this young woman's experience, and just how she feels. I really want to see more of that, and I love the setting that it's set in, so I love the way that it's telling the story. So I give it a solid 3.
Excellent. I'm going to go with a 3.5. I really liked it, too. It does feel like a personal story. She maybe has injected some of her past experiences into it, and she seems to do that a lot. In a lot of what she's done, she seems to insert a character that is a Latinx, Afro-Latina character into her storytelling. And so she puts her point of view. So that's very common. Now, interesting enough, we decided to pick Vida Ayala as our artist spotlight this week. Unlike our other two spotlight creators, she's a newcomer. This isn't somebody with a big catalog of work. As you're going to see, you're going to find out it's very small stuff, but she's hot. And I think by this time next year, we're going to be talking about her the way we talk about some of these other up-and-coming hot writers. All the pieces are in place. She has big projects coming from the big two. She's about to get a big assignment with Valiant. There's a lot coming, and she's a worthy person to watch, to keep your eye on. So, Fred, what do you have on Vida Ayala?
Well, I don't know much about Vida Ayala. I know, like, I'm reading one of her other titles, The Wilds, and it's pretty good. It's kind of got like I think we discussed this before, Andrew, that it's got like a Walking Dead type feel to it. It's definitely a good book. I think it's 4 issues in right now. I'm right now stuck on issue 3. I'm still trying to find time to fit all these books in. But and then didn't she do like a book called like, is it Bitch Planet?
She did an issue of Bitch Planet, but that's not her series. But yes, she did do an issue of Bitch Planet.
Because I could have swore that I saw her name on that. And I know she did. Is it... I have the book here. I forgot the exact title, but I think it's Puerto Rico Strong that she was on there to give money for the hurricane relief and what.
She did a story. Mm-hmm. She is Puerto Rican. So
yes, yeah. And that's basically all I know. I know she's done some things for DC and that she's really good friends with a couple of the writers there. But if you guys got something else.
Chris, do you have anything on Vida?
I don't necessarily have anything. This Submerged was my first story with her, but after doing research and kind of figuring out her background, I'm really interested in going back and kind of reading all her works. Like you said, she's pretty new. She doesn't have the largest bibliography, but I'm going to go back and check her stuff out because it's important that, you know, artists from different backgrounds and writers from different backgrounds, you know, get supported and get the recognition when they write books. I feel, you know, personally, that it's important to have creative talents of all different backgrounds and all different perspectives to be writing our comic books. Because at the end of the day, you know, comics in some ways reflect our real lives. And when we read comics, we want to see, you know, a world that is being changed for the better, you know, by our heroes. So she's someone I'm going to continue to look out for. Like you said, mm-hmm. I think she's going to be on the rise. It appears that she has some stories to tell, that are important, that, I think some people need to hear. And so I'm going to go back and I'm actually going to read all her stuff sometime next week and see what that takes me. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm a fan of hers, and so I amassed a little bit of info to share. Like I said, she's a relative newcomer. She's from New York City. She's Puerto Rican, American, and she is part of the LGBT community. She represents it proudly. She is a bit political in the way she writes, but not overly political, I would say. But she definitely has a message to share, and she does a good job at doing it. While in New York, starting about the age of 19, she worked in Forbidden Planet Comics. I've never been there. Have you been there, Chris?
Yes, that is my go-to comic book store. Maybe I've met her or something before.
She worked there about 6 or 7 years. She worked there with Rosenberg, and they are still to this day very good friends, Matthew Rosenberg. And I guess she would like write while she was there on her breaks. And it was Rosenberg who kind of pushed her to like, you need to do something with this. You need to put it out there. And, you know, he kind of gave her the little nudge to go make some pitches, you know, to try to become a comic. She's been a fan for a long time. I guess Wonder Woman was one of the first comics that got her into comic books. She saw Wonder Woman as a Puerto Rican woman. She said, you know, the tiny shorts, the flashy tiny shorts and the long curly hair, kind of that. But to me, it was Puerto Rican. I saw her that way and she accepted. She's a big manga fan, too. Something you like. So she loves manga. Her big break was she was invited to the first DC Writers Workshop class. And that also had Rosenberg and some other famous people. So that class is taught by Scott Snyder. When we did, was our Rosenberg a live one or was that one of our practice ones? Maybe it was one of our practice ones.
I think it's one of our practice.
And we talked about how Rosenberg. And so it's a workshop where they worked with artists and they worked with Scott Snyder and learning how to write comic books. And she was part of the initial program. And that's led to her writing a lot of stories for DC. Now, she doesn't have an ongoing series she's ever got. She's just popped up all over the place. She's teamed a lot with Steve Orlando. He seems to be her assigned mentor, possibly, to work with her. She did a story in Wonder Woman Annual 1. She did issue 19 of Supergirl with Orlando. She did a story in the Batman Annual. She did a Green Lanterns story in DC Rebirth Holiday Special, which is kind of cool because that is the first time that someone has really acknowledged that Jessica Cruz may be Mexican. She puts in some little hints about a recipe that's a family recipe that's a traditional Mexican recipe. Other than that, they've never really said what ethnicity Jessica is. She did a Suicide Squad Most Wanted, a Batman Beyond, and just recently she did a really cool cheetah story in the DC Beach Blanket Bad Guys Super Special, and I would recommend that highly. It's a great cheetah story. There's a young Afro-Latina archaeologist who goes out to find cheetah because cheetah's kind of the person she looks up to for some reason, and they have a great dialogue, and cheetah kind of has to like break her heart and send her on her way because the girl wants to be like cheetah, and you know the cheetah doesn't want that to happen. And then you have this great emotional battle between Wonder Woman and Cheetah. So it's a pretty cool one. And then, of course, she was in the new talent showcase for DC. Some things that are upcoming. She's about to be part of that team that's going to work on Marvel Knights with Kate Rosenberg and Tini Howard, who was Euthanauts that we just talked about. At Valiant, she's going to start writing Livewire, which is a really cool character. Okay. It's going to be Livewire's first standalone comic. And then I'm praying DC gives her something, because if DC loses her to Marvel like they lost Rosenberg, I'm going to be very upset. So that's just a little bit I have on her.
I mean, well, two things. The first one is she did that with Jessica Cruz. Hopefully they give her some Kyle Rayner so people finally acknowledge that he's Hispanic.
Yeah.
And secondly, a big shout out to DC for like having those classes and like finding young talent across the country and kind of raising them up, you know, from the ground up. And showing them, you know, how to, that's a really dope thing. I find that to be really cool. You know, finding different talent from across, you know, the country from different backgrounds and perspectives and seeing who's really got, the touch and just raising them up, you know, giving them mentors and showing them how to create really good comic books. I think that's really good for the culture, and I hope other publishing companies do the same. I think that's a really cool idea.
Yeah, because I think it's prepared her. Because we were talking about, Fred and I, about Marvel Knights, and I think she's ready for that. Having read all these little DC stories of hers, she understands comic books. She's been around comic books. She will do her research. And at the same time, she's not afraid to put her own stamp on things, from what I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just going to be like, oh my God, it's Batman. I better do it exactly like I'm supposed to do Batman. I think she will put her little what makes her special onto whatever she does, so that makes me excited. Fred, what do you think?
I'm really excited because I did see a tweet, but I can't remember, like, she mentioned like 5 or 6 books that she's working on, so you know she's hot right now. Everybody's gonna get on her. The Marvel Knights is something that I'm like extremely excited for, because it's like, if Donny Cates picks you to be one of his writers, you're good. Like, this dude, he knows his stuff, and he knows what he wants to write. So I just can't wait to see, like, what she does write for him.
Yeah. I was thinking about some things I would love to see her write at Marvel. I think there's more characters that she'd be great at. I think she would...
Spider-Girl.
Yes, that's a good one. I also would like to see her take a crack at Miles. Don't just make it just female characters. I think she could do something interesting with Miles. America Chavez. I'm still kind of hurting over the way the last America Chavez effort just kind of didn't work. I think she could do a good America Chavez and bring that character back to the front. And then I was thinking something a little different is maybe Daughters of the Dragon, Misty Knight, and Colleen. I think she would get the New York vibe and give them both the right attitude I want from the characters.
Yeah. I just really need Anya Corazon to get her own solo. I need that bad.
Yeah, she would do it. if she can get a pitch. Fred, is there any book you think might suit her particularly, like to see in the Marvel Knights line? Or
no, I mean, I'm like America Chavez, like how she was written just recently in the West Coast Avengers. Like, if she can take the character and do something like that, then man, because they kind of made her, pardon my French, but she's a badass.
Mm-hmm.
And they need somebody to like take that character and elevate them. So I definitely think she would be a perfect person for that.
Yeah, I think Ellis did, was it Ellis on Ultimates? That did Ultimates. I'm trying to think who did Ultimates. But anyway, she was a badass in Ultimates, but she lacked a little bit of that Latino personality. And I think if you take that badass and then, like you said, take some of the Kelly Thompson's fun, and then you add the fact that you have somebody who understands the background and is from the LGBT community, right, you could really do something interesting. And yeah, I think she's, you know, She has the chops to do something and make America Chavez something that becomes a movie at some point. That's what all that's missing.
Definitely. She's the type of person that can give the fire, the passion, the voice of that character beaten as she is Latina. So, I mean, that's perfect casting right there. Good call.
All right. Well, that's our books. I mean, that's our creator spotlight for this week. Relatively new, but it's someone we feel you should watch. Keep an eye out for her. I think the next thing you'll see from her is the next issue of The Wilds. It is very Walking Dead. I agree with that. And so now we're going to open it up to some discussion of what you're reading, what you're watching, what comic book stuff you want to share with the rest of our listeners this week. So, Fred, I'm going to hit you first because you probably got a big old list, even on this crazy fifth
Wednesday. Not this week. This week's been kind of crazy because the kids are getting ready to go back to school or shopping. Hockey's in full force. It's ridiculous here, but I did fit in some books. I fit in Brothers Dracula number 5 by Colin Bunn, Mirko Korlach, Maria Santanello. That's an Aftershock book. Oh, and Letters by Simon Boland. It's a really good book. I like it. I like how Kolak's art is in it. It's super good. It's creepy. It's definitely a Cullen Bunn type book. Then I read like Cyber Force 5, Top Cow Image. It's a Brian Edward Hill, Matt Hawkins. I'm trying to pronounce this guy's name. I think it's Attilio Rojo and Troy Petrie. Like, that book, man, they use kind of characters like Aphrodite 5 that we're reading. Mm-hmm. And that's a really good book. I read X-23. I liked it. Probably not as much as Chris did, but I liked it. Then I read this crazy book, man. It's called Hillbilly Red Eye Witchery from Beyond Part 1.
Oh my god.
I'm on, you know, I kind of like, I like Southern Bastards, the book Southern Bastards. So when I saw the name Hillbilly, I'm like, okay, this should be pretty good.
I don't know where you find this stuff. I don't even know.
You gotta head to the hills. But it's put out by like Albatross Funny Books. And
oh my god.
Yeah, it's kind of like a low tier stuff. But dude, it's really good. Like, it's like the legend and the reference. Like, when I read it in like this redneck voice. Like, I watch a couple like country music videos and then I kind of like adapt my voice and then I read it. So that's the feel I get. And I'm like, you know, kind of like that.
You made a country music redneck playlist to go along with it.
Yeah, because, you know, you're trying to like feel the characters and stuff. So you got to get in character and, you know, being a city boy, I don't know how to speak like that too much, but but then then I read like a lot of trades. Like, I started like the volume 4 of Batman the New 52 run. I'm really enjoying the Scott Snyder run. I have a new appreciation for Batman because of that run. I started reading like Damned volume 1 by Cullen Bunn. That's kind of like a mafia book. And one of Andrew's favorite Valiant titles, I started the Matt Kent volume 1. Is it Ninjak?
Ninjak.
Mm-hmm. Ninjak. I started that book last night, but I fell asleep after like a few pages. But I mean, I'm going to start investing some time in these so we're able to like do some Valiant books, especially with Livewire coming out and stuff. I need to jump on that stuff, and having the Comixology app, I'm able to read a lot of Valiant books for free, so I'm going to take advantage of that.
Yeah.
Well, that was a slow week for him, folks. he still named, 10 different comics at least? A couple of trades? That was a slow week. Just remember that. Chris, what have you been up to this week?
I've been reading. I've been reading a lot of the Star Wars stuff that's coming out of Marvel, which is really good. I especially recommend both volumes of the Darth Vader series. So this is the second volume. Both are really spectacular. They kind of take place after Episode 3. If you're a Star Wars fan, you know what I'm talking about. X-23, of course. That's my favorite character. I really like it. Probably more than both my co-hosts. Yeah, Gabby and Laura, man, they're great characters. And if a writer can just capture the essence and the relationship between the two, I'm going to read it. I can read it all day long. What else I've been reading? I've been catching up on, leading up to Uncanny. So I've read Extermination 2. I'm catching up on the X-Men Blue and Gold. I kind of slowed down on that after the wedding. So I'm catching up on those back issues. What else am I reading? I'm catching up on the older Champions run. I know we talked about Champions, I believe, a little while ago. So I'm catching up on that. What else? Oh, yeah. One that's really good is Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man. So I feel like that's the one Spider-Man series that, like, people don't talk about. But it's been coming out for a while now. It's got about 3 or 4 trades. So that's interesting. A lot of people have been talking about, like, you know, the regular Spider-Man run. Yeah. But Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man is a very good book because it just tells classic Peter Parker stories. So if you're a big fan of Peter Parker, then I recommend that book because it's none of that cute stuff with trying to change him. It's just Peter Parker as you know and love him. Getting into some shenanigans with some villains, and I really, it seems like a book that's for everyone. Mm-hmm. So it's not really a lot of dark stuff going down, but it's really fun if you love Spider-Man.
Excellent. Yeah. I echo the Darth Vader. The Darth Vader is a really good book that people don't think about because it's Star Wars. And that's Charlie Soule, I believe. And yeah, that's a really good book.
Even if you're not like a Star Wars fan, this kind of takes Darth Vader to a whole nother level that you get to like know him on. I don't want to, spoil anything for anyone who might be looking to get into the series, so I won't. But yeah, if you've just ever been remotely interested in Darth Vader, it's all about him. You know, it's not really talking about anyone else. It's really Darth Vader focused. You really get into his psyche, his mission, and who he is, and his relationship with the dark side. You know, that's something you don't normally see in the Star Wars movies. It's all about the Jedi and their relationship with the Force. But you never quite get to see how, like, a Sith might really feel about the dark side and their relationship with it. So I won't get too deep into it, but because I geeked out enough. But yeah, check out Star Wars, Darth Vader.
Yeah, definitely. I'm gonna steal a little from the Nation of Nerds last week on my Rico. I think touched on that book, and he basically said Darth Vader doesn't love. Yeah, he goes out of his way to make sure there's no love in the world. Fred, really quick, that Brian Edward Hill book, is it related to the Aphrodite 5? Because it looks like her on the cover, like they could be same type of androids.
Yeah, I mean, it has shown like the character in the past, but not. I don't think like that exact character. I don't think she's been introduced. I think she's only been introduced in the standalone book. But it's been a while since I read the first book, and she wasn't in number 5.
Mm-hmm. So, but it's the same world.
Yeah, it's from that universe, definitely.
Oh, okay. Very cool. Well, I've only read a couple of books besides our regular ones this week. I've been kind of tied up. But I read 2 books that I really enjoyed and I wanted to get in. And one was The Extermination. I was very happy with it. It continued going where it's going. And there was a nice little surprise at the end. It's been doing a good job of leaving me on really good panels as it ends. And it's continued to clean up the universe, and I'm excited to see where it goes. And then my favorite book of the week, easily my personal pick of the week, was from Valiant in the Harbinger Wars, the last part, Harbinger Wars 2. There's this battle between Livewire and Exo Manowar. If you're a Valiant reader, it was 2 heavyweights going at it. And to understand Valiant, their universe is smaller. So when they do something like this, there's basically their version of a civil war, and almost there's less characters to deal with, so they can really put some gravitas into these matchups and really make them worth it. And the reasons for them to fight and how it ends and the consequences are really going to affect the universe. And again, being a small universe, we're talking about six books, six different titles. It's going to have a great impact. And as a Valiant reader, I just can't wait for what's next. And so that was my big one. And I told Rico that I'm going to get you guys onto Valiant eventually. So that's my big one. So those were my two reads. Anything else, Fred? Because I know you might have one last comic sitting back there in the pile.
I've read a couple like small indie books, but I can't remember like the writer and artist, and it comes from a small app, and it's called Pizza Boys. I think I posted it on our link on our Twitter page. But it's a fun book. It's a fun read. It's kind of like a bro book, like, you know, just a bunch of boys hanging out, getting some pizza, doing crazy stuff. It's I dug it. I think I bought like the first three issues of it. I think they have three. Yeah, I think the first three issues, but I haven't gotten into all of it. But it's one of those creator-owned books, and those are the type of things that we're trying to, you know, show some love to.
Yep, exactly. Chris, anything else you want to throw out there?
I've been binge watching Supergirl. I never quite got into the series, but it's on Netflix, so I figured why not check it out. I've been watching it with the family. It's a great show. I especially love the episodes that are fun. I just got to the episode where she encounters, see if I get this guy's name right, Mixis Pitalik.
Yeah.
That's how you say it, yeah. Mixis Pitalik. Yeah, so that was a really fun episode. I love watching heroes just have fun. Like, I'm tired of all the dark, depressing stuff. So I really like lighthearted, fun, you know, books and TV shows. And Supergirl has some of its darker episodes, of course, but a lot of it is lighthearted, fun to watch, entertaining. Yeah. And I also like saying the word Mixis Pitalik.
Yeah. Supergirl's a good series. We watched it. I think I have two more to watch from last season. I just didn't finish and I got busy. And there's two sitting on the DVR. But yeah, I'm not happy they moved it to Sunday. I really am concerned. If you move a show to Sunday, their ratings are going to drop. And
what was it before?
It was on Mondays. It was a better day. But Sunday, they're doing it to help out. I guess the new Charmed show is also going to be on Sunday. So they're trying to create
Charmed back?
Yeah. It's all Latinas. That's the only interesting thing. But yeah, they're bringing Charmed. So I think they're kind of going for a young female audience on a Sunday night, an alternative to Walking Dead and Game of Thrones type stuff. You know, maybe they'll get a younger female audience. So I get it, but I am concerned. Whenever you move a show to that day, it's not so good, because it's a good show and I'm looking forward to the crossover. I'm ready for Batwoman and all these other cool characters to bring in.
Yes.
So, all right. Well, unless anyone has anything else, that sounds like our show for this week.
I just want to add one thing. I listened to Mark and Hiram's Fantasy Football podcast today, and I want to address something that they spoke about. So why not do it here? Uh-oh. I want to address that Olive Garden is not Italian food. Forget about it.
Okay, wait a minute. Does this argument stem from the argument that started on the Cool Damp or Cool Awesome podcast? What's the name of the movie one?
Cool Ass Podcast.
Yeah, Cool Ass Podcast, where they were arguing whether Panda Express was Chinese food.
Yes, absolutely.
So then they took it the next level and said Olive Garden. Yeah, okay.
Mark and Hiram were speaking about it and saying, like, you know, talking back and forth about Italian food. And, like, I think – I forgot which guy I asked, but they said, you know, is that like saying Olive Garden's Italian food? And they were both saying how they liked Olive Garden stuff. No, that stuff is fregazi. Okay? Forget about it.
Oh, man.
Okay.
Come to the Bronx, man. Come to the Bronx. Right. Little Italy. Little Italy has some great Italian restaurants. I eat there a lot with my family. That's some real Italian food, right,
yeah,
Fred?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not like That's like saying Sbarro, you know, like you go into the mall and saying Sbarro's like the stuff. That's no, I'm not hearing that.
If these guys say Chipotle's Mexican food, I'm unsubscribing. Ooh. Across the board. Mm. They've been warned.
Ooh. Shots fired.
Shots fired, man. It seems like they're going down the list and turning everything fast food. All right.
Oh, man. This is becoming a beef.
Yeah. Sorry, I had to get that out there, man. That it got personal.
Dish track coming soon.
All right, man. Well, that's it, guys. Once again, thanks for joining us. My name's Andrew. You can find me at Real Comics on Twitter, RELCOMICS. We can also find us at our podcast page, Street, STREET, Level, LVL, Floppy, FLOPPY. Leave a comment, leave a question. We can answer it. Let us know, interact, tell us what you like, what you don't like, maybe some book you want us to look at. Okay, Chris, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at @panels_hoodies. I'm on Twitter. I've kind of been busy, so I haven't been on there lately, but I do see my notifications. So if you want to talk about something that I spoke about on the podcast, or you're interested in a point I made and you want to talk about it, I'm all for it. Hit me up.
Excellent. And Fred, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Comics Fred. My name on there is Fred Reads Comics, I believe. I can't remember. But yeah. And also, hey, you know, if you have an iTunes account or something and you like what we're doing, give us a 5-star review. We'll be your friends forever.
Yes. Drop a review, subscribe, so you get our podcast when it drops. You can find us on YouTube. You can find us on Spotify. You can find us on Stitcher. You can find us on Google Play. There's all kinds of places where you can get a podcast and you can give us a follow and a listen. Last of all, a shout out to the Nation of Nerds. Shout out to Comic Book Core. A shout out to, what's the name of the Final Fantasy podcast?
I don't think it has a name. It's Nation Nerds Fantasy Football.
Cool ass Nation of Nerds Fantasy Football.
No, it's Nation Nerds Fantasy Football. But I think it's under his label. I don't think he's changed the name. I think it's like #NONFantasy. That's what he's using so we can do this. But also one last thing, I know. On Professor Frenzy's podcast, he shouted out us and stuff. Him, Jerry, and Chris, they spoke about our podcast and showed us some love. So, you know, go out there and listen to his show, as their show as well. It's a good show. They do kind of the same things we do. They're some good guys. They, you know, we interact a lot with them. So, you know, give them a follow.
Excellent. Very good. Well, anyone else have anything to drop?
No, unless you guys want to talk about Olive Garden.
No, you're on.
Okay, well, just like the streets we call our home, show some love for the creator. Oh, we out.